This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
UN Human Rights Chief Zayed Raad al-Hussein warns that governments increasingly are moving toward authoritarianism and oppression, crushing human rights values and protections in their wake.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva. Details coming up.
Also, al-Shabaab militants kill at least 16 in the Somali town of Beled Hawo, and 500 people have died in the ongoing cholera outbreak in the DRC.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, al-Shabaab militants launched an attack on the Somali town of Beled Hawo today. Security sources say militants attacked three locations in the town, which sits on the Somalia-Kenya border. The first attack targeted a military base about 6 kilometers outside Beled Hawo. VOA's Somali service reports that 14 government soldiers were killed in the attack, with 8 others wounded. Soldiers fled the base following the attack and crossed into Kenya. Militants later entered the town and attacked the main police station and then targeted the town's district headquarters. Kenyan troops fired artillery fire on militants to prevent them from entering Kenya. Residents also said they saw Kenyan military helicopters trying to force al-Shabaab militants to withdraw from the town. The militants retreated just over an hour after entering the town, according to the mayor. Al-Shabaab claimed it killed nearly 40 soldiers and freed 35 inmates. A Somali official denies the claim.
The head of the multinational task force fighting Boko Haram says the war against the militants is being won, but warned that suicide bombings remain a threat, killing close to 400 people in Nigeria and Cameroon since April. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the village of Bodua in Cameroon.
Soldiers from the 7,800-person task force have been stationed in several towns and villages along the Nigeria-Cameroon border since those communities were liberated from Boko Haram a little over a year ago.
Mora! Mora!
The force's commander, Nigerian-born General Lucky Irabo, visited 4 communities along the border on Saturday to reassure local residents and rally the troops.
Boko Haram and other criminal gangs, their end has come. Boko Haram is on the downward trend. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
That alone should motivate you to know that the war has been won, and for it, you to give in the last ounce of your energy and your commitment so that they will be completely defeated. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Irabo ordered the soldiers to focus on stopping suicide bombers and told them to work more closely with local self-defense groups. He urged civilians to report anything or anyone suspicious. The Boko Haram conflict has displaced over 2 million people in 4 countries, but the governments of Nigeria and Cameroon are urging people to go home. General Irabo said the soldiers' presence in villages will keep Boko Haram from taking them back. However, security is not the only challenge the returnees face. Abubakar Buba, an elder of Budua village on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, pulls his thirsty donkey to a nearby stream. The 75-year-old returned home in August. He fled Budua after a Boko Haram attack in 2014. He says the loud sounds of bombs that destroyed their village mosque, killing several people, including their imam, also ruptured his eardrums. A soldier asked Buba how life has been in his village since he returned. Buba said he is poor and lives on food aid from well-wishers and neighbors. He says he hasn't seen his children since 2014, when they also fled. The village, once home to 200 people, is now inhabited by barely 70. The residents say they are hungry as the fighting has devastated farmland, leaving farmers unable to cultivate crops or take care of livestock. Cameroon's government has announced plans to provide seeds to farmers and financial aid to unemployed youths to start small businesses. But the people in this village say they are still waiting. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Budwa, Cameroon.
DRC officials say 25 people were killed and nearly 60 injured yesterday when a bus overturned in the southeast of the country. AFP reports the accident happened on National Road No. 1 as the bus was traveling from Kitwit to Kinshasa. Officials have not announced the cause of the accident, but survivors told AFP the bus was traveling at an excessive speed. Last Friday, 11 people were killed in the Kasai region when a freight truck overturned.
Also in the Democratic Republic of Congo, more than 500 people have died in the ongoing cholera outbreak in the country. About 24,000 cases have been reported so far this year. Reuters quotes the World Health Organization as saying the epidemic has spread to 20 of the DRC's 26 provinces. The WHO is concerned the cholera epidemic will spread among the nearly 1.5 million displaced people in the country. The WHO adds that the risk of spread remains very high towards the Grand Kasai region, where degraded sanitary and security conditions have increased vulnerability. There's another cholera outbreak that's raising concerns. Nearly 1,300 cases have been reported in northeast Nigeria, with at least 35 deaths. AFP reports most of the cases have occurred in the Muna camp near the Maiduguri in Borno State.
UN Human Rights Chief Zayed Raad al-Hussein warns that governments increasingly are moving toward authoritarianism and oppression, crushing human rights values and protections in their wake. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA on the High Commissioner's address at the opening of the UN Human Rights Council's three-week session in Geneva.
UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Zayed Raad al-Hussein paints a dark picture of the state of human rights around the world. He condemns the actions of violent extremists and terrorists, but warns the greater dangers to society are from governments who peel away human rights protections. In a rapid overview of the global situation, Zayed expresses concern about extensive gross human rights violations in 39 countries. He highlights the brutal security operation underway in Myanmar's Rakhine State, which has prompted more than 270,000 minority Muslim Rohingya to flee to Bangladesh in less than 3 weeks.
We have received multiple reports and satellite imagery of security forces and local militia burning Rohingya villages and consistent accounts of extrajudicial killings, including shooting fleeing civilians.
Zayed calls on the Myanmar government to end its current military operation and to reverse its discrimination against the Rohingya. The High Commissioner also condemns the Saudi-led coalition airstrikes in Yemen, which he says are responsible for most of the more than 5,000 civilian deaths in the country. Turning to Africa, he says he is deeply alarmed by the sharp deterioration in the security situation in Central African Republic.
I am extremely concerned about persistent reports of atrocity crimes, which are pushing the country very close to a complete breakdown along religious and ethnic lines. Anti-Balaka and ex-Seleka forces, as well as various splinter groups, are responsible for the escalating cycles of reprisal attacks.
This is the final year of Zayed's mandate as High Commissioner. He says the world has grown darker and dangerous during this time. He says human rights principles are the only way to avoid global war and profound misery and deprivation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The International Committee of the Red Cross warns that the flow of weapons is at the highest level since the end of the Cold War. It says that contributing to violent extremism in the Middle East, Africa, and Asia, as well as organized crime. The ICRC issued the warning today in Geneva at the opening of the Arms Trade Treaty Conference. The treaty regulates the international trade in conventional arms and seeks to prevent and eradicate illicit trade and diversion of conventional arms. Dr. Kathleen Lowland is the head of the organization's arms unit. From Geneva, she spoke to VOA's Jody Kapoor.
Well, the big issue for us is unregulated arms transfers or poorly regulated arms transfers. That is where states continue to transfer weapons to parties to armed conflicts, that is the belligerents or fighters in wars, without regard for how those belligerents and fighters are behaving themselves, that is, whether they are respecting the rules of war, also known as international humanitarian law. And this is a big concern for us.
Now, this is not the first time the ICRC has looked at this issue. It did a study a number of years ago, I believe.
We carried out a study covering a range of states in several continents. This was 20 years ago. This was a study on arms availability and the protection of civilians in armed conflict. And the conclusions of that study still stand true today, very unfortunately. What we found in that study is that poorly controlled availability of weapons actually fuels conflicts and prolongs conflicts, but critically also facilitates violations of the laws of war. Also, the fact that too many weapons are available to violent extremist groups or other actors, be they state forces or non-state forces, that use the weapons in an undisciplined manner, this actually hinders our ability to bring humanitarian assistance because it increases the level of insecurity in these countries. So there has been for a long time now an urgency for states to introduce a level of responsibility in the arms trade. And this is what the Arms Trade Treaty is all about.
What are some of the main hotspots that you see around the world where this problem is occurring?
Well, we see this today very much so in the Middle East, where very brutal conflicts are ongoing, either in Syria, Iraq, or Yemen. We see this also in Africa, in the Sahel region, where conflicts are raging, especially in the Lake Chad Basin region, as well as South Sudan. South Sudan today is just, I think, a very good example of where uncontrolled availability of weapons has very much fueled the horrific violence we are seeing there today. Today we have 6 million people in need of humanitarian assistance in South Sudan, nearly 2 million refugees, in addition to that, nearly 2 million internally displaced persons, all in need of assistance. The trouble is it's very difficult for the International Committee of the Red Cross and other humanitarian agencies to get to the people in need precisely because of the high degree of insecurity due to the uncontrolled availability of weapons, not just into the hands of armed groups, but also just civilians picking up weapons and using them. This is just fueling attacks against civilians, attacks against healthcare workers, attacks against humanitarian workers. And we ourselves have just lost a colleague in South Sudan very tragically 2 days ago. This has got to stop. We need to bring the arms trade under control.
And what are the chances of that happening?
Well, we have hope today because since 2013, there is now an international treaty, a global treaty called the Arms Trade Treaty, to which today nearly two-thirds of states have subscribed to in one form or another. The Arms Trade Treaty commits the states that have signed up to it to ensuring that the weapons that they export, that they transfer, do not make their way into the hands of those who would use them to commit violations of the laws of war.
Dr. Kathleen Lowen, head of the arms unit at the International Committee of the Red Cross. From Geneva, she spoke to VOA's Jody Kapoor.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Al-Shabaab militants kill at least 16 in the Somali town of Beled Hawa today. The head of the multinational task force fighting Boko Haram says the war against the militants is being won, but warned that suicide bombings remain a threat. And 500 people have died in the ongoing cholera outbreak in the DRC. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
A women's advocacy group in Liberia says it is not satisfied with the number of women participating in the country's October 10th presidential and parliamentary elections. The country's elections commission says the more than 1,000 candidates, only 163 are women. Counselor Yvette Chesson-Were is the executive director of the Angie Brooks International Center for Women's Empowerment, Leadership, Development, International Peace, and Security. She tells VOA's James Butte, who is on assignment in Liberia, that although the election of President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf was a significant milestone for women in Africa, she wants a lot more women to step forward as candidates.
We are disappointed over the number of presidential candidates. We only have one woman presidential candidate at the moment, and that's very disappointing, especially after Johnson Sirleaf. And even in terms of the electorate, looking at who they can elect as the next president of Liberia, we have one vice presidential candidate and one presidential candidate. We had hoped that we'll have more women stepping forward, but there are so many challenges to women stepping forward in the political arena in Liberia. Starting from political parties themselves and are giving women equal participation in political parties. Political parties continue to sideline women. They continue to think that they're there as women wings, and I don't understand this wing concept. We are not chickens. Why are we having wings? You know? But instead of mainstreaming the women, because of our cultural orientation of who we are as Liberian women, we are brought up to think in terms of you are to be seen and not heard. And so women coming out being aggressive or assertive are seen as being bullies, and therefore most women don't want to be known as that. And they continue to recline and think people are going to come to them, but that's not politics.
So are you telling the women to be more assertive?
Very much so. To be assertive, to know what you want and go for it. We do it in our everyday lives. We protect our families with such venom. Why can you not protect your nation with the same? Because to go into politics means that you are going to deal with the health and the protection of your country. And it should be not with any less venom than you're protecting your family. Because if you don't protect the country, your family isn't protected. I don't care what you do. The political structure is such that the men make these decisions at night, in the bars, etc. And most women are home at that time of the night. When you're out with them in the bars and you're a woman politician, they're saying, oh, you know, that's a loose woman.
Yvette, I want to ask you, you mentioned there's only one female presidential candidate.
Yes.
And I'm assuming you're talking about Magdela Cooper.
Right.
There was a presidential debate. She was not included.
Right.
There is another presidential debate coming up. What's your view? Do you think she should be included?
Yes, certainly. And we will have her included. This next presidential debate, Angie Brooks International Center is going to co-sponsor it. And one of the things that we're requiring is that the lone female candidate must be included. Because how are we going to discuss women's views, women issues, without a female candidate being there?
What do you say to those people who would tell you, Liberia just had the first female elected president in Africa, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf? Do you think that she's done enough to advocate on behalf of women? Do you think the condition of women has advanced under this president?
I do think she's done things to advance the women just by being president. I mean, that immediately tells every woman in Liberia, the door is open, I've broken the glass ceiling. Walk through it. What's stopping you now? It's open. So just that act alone of being able to achieve the presidency immediately opened for the rest of us this whole door. Mm-hmm. So we thank her for that. In terms of women feeling that they've been empowered, Liberian women have always been in power. Yes, our sisters up in the interior may have had challenges, but I think now that they've seen Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and seen so many women in leadership, visibly in leadership, that they now know they can achieve it.
Counselor Yvette Chesanwere is the executive director of the Angie Brooks International Center for Women's Empowerment, Leadership Development, International Peace and Security. She spoke with VOA's James Butte in Monrovia.
Today is the 16th anniversary of the 9/11 terror attacks on the United States. President Trump led the nation today in remembering that fateful day and those that lost their lives.
We're gathered here today to remember a morning that started very much like this one. Parents dropped off their children at school. Travelers stood in line at airports and getting ready to board flights. Here at the Pentagon and at offices all across the country, people began their early meetings. Then our whole world changed. America was under attack, first at the World Trade Center, then here at the Pentagon, and then in Pennsylvania. The horror and anguish of that dark day were seared into our national memory forever. It was the worst attack on our country since Pearl Harbor. And even worse, because this was an attack on civilians, innocent men, women, and children whose lives were taken so needlessly.
Trump says America was changed forever on 9/11.
On that day, not only did the world change, but we all changed. Our eyes were opened to the depths of the evil we face. But in that hour of darkness, we also came together with renewed purpose. Our differences never looked so small. Our common bonds never felt so strong. The sacrifice grounds on which we stand today are a monument to our national unity and to our strength.
President Trump speaking today on the 16th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks on the U.S. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wahib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Dan Crafton, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next, Straight Talk Africa, fresh off a three-nation Africa visit to the Democratic Republic of Congo, Zambia, and Tanzania. Shaka Sali talks about the fascinating people he met and the challenges he encountered, reporting on democracy in Africa. On the road with Shaka, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.